A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been building a Google Photos album of his son Ezra. Over 1,000 photos and videos now. Beautiful keepsake stuff. And he's realized something genuinely terrifying. There's no real incremental backup. If he loses access to that Google account, everything's gone. He wants a quarterly backup pipeline. Pull new photos from a specific album, push copies to his UNAS, to Wasabi, to Backblaze, and burn M-disks. He's technical enough to build something, but the API situation is, well, let's just say Google didn't exactly make this easy.
They really didn't. And the stakes here are the kind that keep you up at night. These aren't memes or screenshots. This is a child's entire documented life. Every tooth, every first step, every video of Ezra doing something adorable that Hannah captured. The prompt is basically asking, how do I not become the parent who loses all of that to a password reset or an account lockout?
Which is not hypothetical. Google's inactivity policy kicks in after 2 years. If something happens, an accident, a medical situation, anything that keeps you from logging in, the account and everything in it can get purged. I've seen it happen. Someone I know lost 15 years of email and photos because they were in the hospital for 18 months, and nobody thought to log into their Gmail.
Even short of catastrophe, account lockouts from suspicious activity flags happen all the time. Google's automated security systems are aggressive, sometimes correctly, sometimes not. If you're traveling internationally and Google decides your login pattern looks unusual, you could be locked out for days or weeks while you fight through recovery. Now imagine that happening and you have no backup of the photos that matter most.
We've established the problem. Now let's look under the hood at the API that makes this so frustrating.
The Google Photos Library API is, honestly, one of the more baffling pieces of Google's developer ecosystem. It's not deprecated, and that's important to clarify right away because there were rumors swirling in early 2025 that it was getting sunset. That didn't happen. The API is still active, still supported, and as of May 2026, the quota is 10,000 requests per day per project. But here's the core limitation, it's read only for media items when it comes to albums. You can list what's in an album, you can download individual media items, but you cannot programmatically add photos to albums, and you absolutely cannot get a webhook or any kind of push notification when new photos are added.
No event-driven architecture. You can't say, tell me every time something new appears in this album. You have to poll.
You have to poll. And polling means you're making API calls on a schedule asking what's in this album now, and then comparing that to what you already have. The album itself doesn't remember what changed. It's a flat list of media item IDs with no concept of added since last Tuesday.
Which is wild when you think about it. Google Photos has a recently added view in the UI. The data exists, they just don't expose it through the API.
And that gap between what the UI shows you and what the API lets you do is the entire story of why this is hard. The UI has search, it has facial recognition, it has photos of Ezra, it has recently added. All of these are powered by internal systems that Google has chosen not to make available programmatically. What we get is a pretty bare-bones REST interface. You authenticate with OAuth, you hit the mediaitems.search endpoint with an album ID filter, and you get back a paginated list of media items. Each item has an ID, a base URL for downloading the actual bytes, a file name, and some metadata like creation time and media type.
Let's walk through what that actually looks like. If I query the album, what comes back?
A JSON response. For a single photo, you'd see something like media item ID, which is a long alphanumeric string, a product URL that links to the photo in the Google Photos web interface, a base URL that's the actual downloadable file. That base URL expires, by the way, so you have to use it within about 60 minutes, plus the file name, the MIME type, and a media metadata object that tells you the width, height, and whether the photo was taken with a camera or created some other way. If it's a video, you get slightly different metadata. If it was uploaded from a phone, you get the original file name. If it was shared from someone else's library, things get complicated. Shared album items sometimes don't have a direct download URL through your own API credentials. You might need to use the partner sharing API, which is a whole separate thing. But for a straightforward album of photos you uploaded yourself, the flow is authenticate, list media items in the album, iterate through the pages, download each one using the base URL.
If I do that every quarter, I'm re-downloading 1,000 photos every single time.
Which is absurd. At roughly 10 megabytes per photo, that's a reasonable average for a modern smartphone shot, maybe higher if we're talking about portrait mode or HDR, you're looking at about 10 gigabytes per full download. On a 100 megabit connection, each photo takes about half a second to download, so the math works out to roughly 8 to 10 minutes for 1,000 photos. Not terrible, but it's wasteful. It burns through your API quota, and it completely defeats the purpose of incremental.
The obvious question, how do you avoid re-downloading what you already have?
This is where the hash-based deduplication comes in, and it's really the key innovation that makes the whole thing viable. The idea is beautifully simple. Maintain a local database that stores a cryptographic hash of every photo you've already downloaded. When you pull the album, you download only the files whose hashes aren't in the database. New photos get downloaded, their hashes get stored, and next quarter you skip everything that's already in there.
You're hashing the actual file bytes, not just relying on the media item ID from Google.
Has to be the file bytes. Google's media item IDs are stable, they don't change, but relying on them alone creates a single point of failure. If Google ever re-indexes your library, or if you're combining photos from multiple sources, the ID approach falls apart. A SHA-256 hash of the file content is deterministic and portable. You can verify the same photo across different albums, different accounts, different backup destinations. It's the universal fingerprint.
You end up with a SQLite database that's basically a lookup table. Hash, file name, download date, album ID, maybe the file path on the NAS.
That's exactly the schema. 4 or 5 columns. You could add a file size column for an extra sanity check, but the hash alone is sufficient for deduplication. The database lives on the NAS. It's tiny. Even for tens of thousands of photos, we're talking megabytes, and it becomes the source of truth for, do I already have this file?
What about the API quota? 10,000 requests a day sounds generous, but if you're listing media items with pagination, how fast does that burn?
The list endpoint returns up to 100 items per page. So for 1,000 photos, you're making about 10 API calls to enumerate the album, plus one call per download. So if you're downloading 100 new photos in a given quarter, you're using roughly 110 API calls out of your 10,000 daily quota. It's a rounding error. Even if you had 10,000 photos with 1,000 new per quarter, you'd still be well under the limit. The quota is not the bottleneck here.
What about Google Takeout? A lot of people assume that's the solution.
Let's address that misconception directly. Google Takeout is not a viable incremental backup solution. It's a full export every time. You request your data, Google generates enormous zip files. For 1,000 photos, expect the export to take anywhere from a few hours to 48 hours to generate, and then you download everything. There's no deduplication, no album structure preserved in the default export, and no way to say, just give me what's new since last time. It's a blunt instrument. Useful if you're migrating away from Google entirely, or if you want one full archive to stash somewhere, but for quarterly incremental backup? Completely wrong tool.
The album structure thing is worth pausing on. Even if you get all the files, you don't get the organization.
Google Photos albums are not folders, they're more like playlists. A photo can be in multiple albums, and the album structure exists only as metadata, associations between media item IDs and album IDs. When you download through Takeout, you get flat folders organized by date, not by album. So your carefully curated Ezra album with hand-picked photos from across 3 years? That becomes a scattered mess across dozens of date-based folders. The metadata export from Takeout does include album membership and JSON files, but reconstructing the albums from that is a whole separate project.
Which brings us to the actual pipeline. You've got the API polling, the hash database, the incremental download. Now, how do you make this run itself every quarter?
That covers the theory. Let's get practical and build the actual pipeline.
The NAS is the orchestrator. That's the key architectural decision.
The NAS runs the show. Whether it's a Synology or a QNAP, both can run Python scripts and both support cron jobs. You write a Python script, maybe 200 lines, that does the following: authenticates with OAuth using a refresh token stored securely on the NAS, queries the Google Photos library, IPI, for all media items in the specified album, computes the SHA-256 hash of each media item's ID plus its file name as a lightweight precheck, then for any item not already in the local SQLite database, downloads the file, computes the full SHA-256 hash of the downloaded bytes, stores the file in a dated folder, something like Ezra Backup, 2026, Q2, and inserts the hash, file name, download date, and album ID into the database.
The precheck with the ID plus file name hash. That's faster than downloading and then hashing.
You can check 1,000 entries against the database in milliseconds without downloading a single byte. Only the new photos trigger a download. For a typical quarter where you've added maybe 50 to 100 new photos, the entire script runs in under 5 minutes.
Then the script triggers replication to the cloud destinations.
After the download phase, the script calls rsync or rclone to push the new dated folder to Wasabi and Backblaze B2. Both of those are S3 compatible object stores, so rclone handles them natively. The command is essentially rclone sync the new folder to the Wasabi bucket, then rclone sync to the Backblaze bucket. The hash database itself also gets backed up. That's a tiny SQLite file that you absolutely do not want to lose, because it's the key to incremental behavior.
The mdisk burning?
That's the final step, and it's the one that requires physical intervention. You can't fully automate optical media burning. Someone has to insert the disk. But the script can prepare everything. You set a threshold. When the cumulative size of new unburned photos exceeds, say, 90 gigabytes, leaving room on a 100 gigabyte mdisk, the script generates a burn folder, sends you a notification, and you pop in a disk. For 1,000 photos at roughly 10 megabytes each, you're looking at about 10 to 15 mdisks total over the lifetime of the archive, not per quarter.
Per quarter, you're probably burning one disk, maybe two, depending on how trigger-happy you are with the camera.
That cadence is actually optimal. The mdisk specification, Millenniata's rated lifespan, is 1,000 years under standard archival conditions. That's cool, dry, dark storage. But the point is, you don't want to be burning disks every week. Quarterly or even biannual burning aligns with archival best practices. You batch up enough new photos to fill a meaningful portion of a disk, you verify the burn, and you store it properly.
What about verification? I've burned disks that looked fine and then wouldn't read 6 months later.
After burning, you run a checksum verification. Compare the SHA-256 hash of every file on the disk against the hash database. If even one file doesn't match, you reburn. Most burning software has a verify after write option, but doing it programmatically against your own hash database gives you an extra layer of confidence. And this is where the hash database proves its value again. It's not just for deduplication, it's your verification manifest.
Let's talk about the tools people might have heard of that don't actually solve this problem. rclone comes up a lot.
rclone is fantastic for what it does, but it uses the Google Drive API, not the Google Photos Library API. That means rclone can see your Google Drive files, and it can see the Google Photos folder that appears in Drive. But that folder is a limited view. It doesn't include albums. It doesn't include photos shared with you. It's essentially a flat dump of your uploaded photos with none of the organizational metadata. If you're just trying to sync everything, rclone can do that. If you're trying to incrementally back up a specific curated album, it can't. That was a promising open source project that used the actual Photos Library, API, and did exactly what we're describing, incremental sync with a local database. But it was abandoned. The last commit was in 2022, and it doesn't support the current API version. It also had limited album support. It could download albums, but the deduplication was based on file name and date, not content hashing, so it was fragile.
The landscape is basically Google Takeout for full exports, rclone for drive-level sync without albums, an abandoned open source tool, or roll your own.
Roll Your Own is the only option that actually meets all the requirements. But Roll Your Own sounds scarier than it is. We're talking about a Python script that's maybe 200 lines using the official Google API client library. The OAuth setup is the most annoying part, and that's a one-time pain.
Let's talk about the OAuth setup, because that's where a lot of technical but not a developer types get stuck.
You need to create a project in the Google Cloud Console, enable the Photos Library API, and create OAuth credentials. The tricky part is that Google requires your app to go through verification if you're using sensitive scopes. But for personal use, you can skip verification by marking the app as internal or by using the test user flow. The refresh token is what matters. Once you have it, your script can authenticate indefinitely without you having to reauthorize every quarter. Store that refresh token in an environment variable or a config file on the NAS with restricted permissions.
Then the script just runs. You set a cron job for the first Sunday of every third month, and you forget about it until you get a notification that there's a new M disk to burn.
That's the peace of mind model. The script emails you or sends a push notification when it runs. Downloaded 47 new photos, 3 new videos. Total archive, 1,247 files, 12.next, MDisk burn, 23 gigabytes until threshold. You glance at it, you go back to your life.
What about videos? They change the math considerably.
A 1-minute 4K video from a modern phone can easily be 400 megabytes. If Daniel's been capturing videos of Ezra, and with a 10-month-old, you absolutely are. The storage requirements jump fast, but the pipeline handles it identically. The hash-based DDUP works on any file type. The MDisk chunking logic just needs to account for larger file sizes. And the download time goes up. A 400 megabyte video on a 100 megabit connection takes about 32 seconds. Not a problem for a quarterly cron job that runs unattended at 3 in the morning.
You've got the script running. Let's talk about the destinations and the quarterly cadence.
The destination strategy follows a modified 3-2-1 rule. 3 copies, the original in Google Photos, the copy on the NASA, and the M-Disk. 2 different media types, magnetic storage on the NAS, optical on the M-Disk. 1 off-site copy, that's where Wasabi and Backblaze come in. Technically, that's 2 off-site copies, which is even better.
Why both Wasabi and Backblaze?
Belt and suspenders. Wasabi has no egress fees, which is great for periodic verification downloads. Backblaze B2 has slightly lower storage costs but charges for egress. Having both means a pricing change or a service outage at one provider doesn't leave you exposed. And they're both S3 compatible, so the R clone configuration is nearly identical.
There's something almost perverse about backing up cloud photos to 2 different clouds. It's like we've come full circle and the cloud is just someone else's computer thing.
Cloud is just someone else's computer with a better SLA. And when the someone else is Google, a company that famously kills products and has automated account lockout mechanisms that are nearly impossible to appeal, you want your eggs in multiple baskets.
Speaking of Google killing products, what's the risk that the Photos Library API gets deprecated or restricted?
It's a real risk. Google has a long history of deprecating APIs with minimal notice. The Google Photos API itself went through a major version change in 2018 that broke a lot of existing integrations. The current API is stable, but there's no guarantee. The mitigation is twofold. First, the hash database and the local file store are completely independent of Google. If the API disappears tomorrow, you still have everything you've downloaded up to that point. Second, this is why the quarterly cadence matters. You're not relying on continuous access, you're doing periodic checkpoints. If the API changes between quarters, you have time to adapt.
You still have Google Takeout as a fallback. It's not incremental, but if the API goes away entirely, you can do one last full export and then figure out a new ingestion pipeline.
Takeout is the emergency parachute. Not your daily driver, but it's there.
Let's address the, is this overkill for 1,000 photos? Question, because I can hear some listeners thinking it.
It's a fair question. 1,000 photos at 10 megabytes each is 10 gigabytes. That fits on a free tier of almost any cloud storage provider. You could just manually download the album once a quarter and be done in 15 minutes. Why build a whole automated pipeline?
Because manual processes fail. That's the entire answer. You'll do it the first quarter. Maybe the second. By the fourth quarter, you'll be busy, you'll put it off, it'll slip to 6 months, then 9. Then suddenly Ezra is 3 years old and you haven't backed up anything in 2 years. And Google locks your account.
The automation is the point. The hash database and the cron job and the R clone sync. The whole purpose is to remove human fallibility from the equation. You set it up once, you test it, and then it just works. The MDIS burning is the only manual step, and that's by design. You want to physically handle and verify your optical media. Everything else should be invisible.
Like adopting a feral cat.
Not sure that analogy holds, but I appreciate the sentiment.
You feed it once, and it keeps coming back. The script is the cat.
The script is the cat that lives in your NAS and occasionally leaves M-disks on your doorstep.
Now I'm picturing a Synology with fur.
Let's maybe move on from that image. Let's talk about a real-world scenario. Imagine a listener with 5,000 photos across 12 albums, some of Ezra, some of family vacations, some of a home renovation project. They set up this pipeline with a single script that accepts an album ID as a parameter. They configure 12 cron jobs, one per album, staggered across the first week of each quarter. Each run checks its own hash database, downloads only new photos, and pushes to the same cloud destinations. The total runtime across all 12 albums is maybe 15 minutes per quarter. 15 minutes of automated processing for complete peace of mind across 5,000 irreplaceable photos.
The hash database is shared across all albums, so if the same photo appears in multiple albums, which it will, because that's how Google Photos works, it only gets downloaded once.
That's the elegance of content-based deduplication. The hash doesn't care which album the photo is in. It just knows, I've seen these bytes before. The database records which albums each hash is associated with, but the file only exists once on disk.
Which also means you're not burning the same photo to multiple M disks if it appears in multiple albums.
The burn logic groups by hash, not by album. You get one canonical copy of each unique photo on optical media with metadata that maps it back to whichever albums it belongs to.
Let's talk about the quarterly cadence specifically. Why not monthly? Why not weekly?
Quarterly balances three competing forces. First, the effort, even automated, you want to minimize API calls and storage operations. Second, the risk window. If Google deletes your account, you lose at most 3 months of new photos. That's painful, but not catastrophic, especially for a baby, where 3 months is a meaningful chunk of development, but not the entire archive. Third, the M-disk economics. Burning a disk every month for a handful of new photos is wasteful. Quarterly batches fill disks more efficiently.
If you're really paranoid, you can run it monthly and just skip the MDIS burn until the threshold is hit. The script doesn't care.
The script is indifferent to your anxiety levels. It just does what it's told.
Which is exactly what you want from infrastructure.
Before we wrap, let's distill this into actionable steps you can implement this weekend.
Step 1. Create a Google Cloud project. Enable the Photos Library API and get your OAuth refresh token. This is the most annoying hour of the whole process. Do it on a Saturday morning with coffee.
Step 2. Write the Python script. Start with a single album, the Ezra album, and get the authentication and listing working. Use the Google API Python client library. Search method is your entry point. Test it with a small album first, maybe 20 photos, to make sure everything works before pointing it at 1,000.
Step 3. Implement the hash database. SQLite is perfect for this. The schema is 4 columns, hash, file name, download date, album ID. Add a unique constraint in the hash column. Every time you download a file, compute the SHA-256 and insert it. If the insert fails because of the unique constraint, you already have that photo. Skip it.
Step 4. Set up the R clone destinations. Configure Wasabi and Backblaze B2 as remotes. Test with a manual sync of the dated folder. Make sure the credentials are stored securely on the NAS, not in the script itself.
Step 5. Add the cron job. Run it on the first Sunday of the quarter at 3 a.m. Have it log output to a file so you can check what happened. Add a simple notification, even just an email using the NAS's built-in mail server so you know it ran.
Step 6. Configure the M-disk burn logic. Set a size threshold. I recommend 90 gigabytes for 100 gigabyte disks to leave room for file system overhead. When the unburned folder exceeds that threshold, the script creates a burn directory, logs which files go on which disk, and sends you a notification. You burn the disk, verify the checksums, and move the verified files to an archived folder so they don't get queued for burning again.
Step 7, test the recovery. This is the step everyone skips. Actually delete a photo from your local copy and verify you can restore it from the NAS, from Wasabi, from Backblaze, and from the M disk. If you haven't tested recovery, you don't have a backup. You have a hope.
That's the most important sentence in this entire episode. If you haven't tested recovery, you don't have a backup. You have a hope. And hope is not a data integrity strategy.
There's an open question that hangs over all of this. Will Google ever add native incremental backup to Google Photos? They've added partner sharing. They've added the lockbox feature. They've improved search, but programmatic album sync remains conspicuously absent.
I'm not optimistic. Google's incentives point toward keeping you in their ecosystem, not making it easy to leave. Every feature that simplifies exporting your data is a feature that reduces switching costs. The Photos Library, API, exists because of regulatory pressure and developer demand, not because it aligns with Google's business model. I don't expect it to get worse. The API is stable, but I don't expect it to get significantly better either.
As photo libraries grow, 4K video, RAW files, burst mode shots, the hash-based approach becomes more critical, not less. 1,000 photos today becomes 10,000 in 5 years. The incremental logic scales linearly with the number of new photos, not the total library size. That's the beauty of it.
The alternative is re-downloading your entire library every quarter, which goes from 10 minutes to an hour to, this job didn't finish before I woke up, and now my ISP is throttling me.
To answer the question directly, yes, there is a way to do incremental quarterly backups of a Google Photos album. It requires a custom Python script, but it's not a massive development project. The hash-based deduplication is the key insight. The NIS is the orchestration hub. And the destination strategy, NIS plus 2 cloud providers plus MDisk, gives you defense in depth against almost any failure mode.
The code for this, the Python script, the SQLite schema, the rclone configuration templates, it's all available. We'll put the GitHub link in the show notes. You can clone it, configure your album ID and OAuth credentials, and have a working pipeline in an afternoon.
Start with a small test album. Verify everything works. Then point it at the Ezra album and sleep better.
If Google ever changes the API, the hash database and the local files don't care. You've already got your copies. The pipeline might need updating, but the photos are safe.
That's the whole game. The photos are safe.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the late Victorian period, a British linguist stationed in Nepal proposed that Inuktitut, the Inuit language of the Canadian Arctic, was related to the languages of the Himalayas through a shared system of polysynthetic morphology, where a single word can express what takes an entire sentence in English. The theory was mainstream for roughly a decade before being thoroughly debunked.
A guy in Nepal looked at a language from Nunavut and said, "These feel similar," and academics ran with it for 10 years.
Comparative linguistics before the comparative method was really, truly a vibes-based discipline. This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. If you've got a technical problem that's been keeping you up at night, especially one where the official tools don't quite do what you need, send it to us at My Weird Prompts. We'll dig into the APIs, we'll write the script, we'll figure out the pipeline.
Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. Leave a review if you found this useful. It helps other people with the same problem find the show.
Until next time.
Keep your photos safe.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu, it's ahead. Send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird props, that's the close from sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird props, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.